Well, welcome everyone to KMUN 91.9. In just a minute, we're going to have a conversation with John Orr and also with Neil Christensen, who is the proprietor of Gun and Boot and Gear inside the M&M store in Uniontown. And looking forward to hear what he has to say, because today's topic is gun laws, what works and what won't. That's kind of hard to say, what works and what won't. So that will get me started that in a minute. Looks like it's going to be a rainy weekend, sunny on Sunday though. And then the way this is going to work, we'll go till about 10 o'clock, then 10:01 we'll have news, then we'll have the Friday Folk Show with Albert. So it's going to be a great morning here for you listeners. And the number here, should you choose to call to express your civil and reasonably informed opinions, would be 503-325-0010. And let's just take a moment to say thanks.
Support for Friday Public Affairs comes in part from the Blue Scorcher Bakery Cafe, baking up community one loaf at a time. Located at 15th and Duane, Astoria, bluescorcher.coop and 503-338-7473. Open daily from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Yes, and we are grateful to the Blue Scorcher for supporting the station and supporting this program, Public Affairs. So let me again remind our callers that today the topic on a conversation with John Orr is gun laws, what works and what won't. And I'm really pleased to have my guest and my friend, Neil Christensen from Gun and Boot and Ammo, which is a store that purveys firearms, ammo, and some such, as well as boots and ammo and sundries. So let me do a little on-the-fly mic check. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, John. I appreciate you having me on.
And I appreciate your coming here, because we as a community, we as a nation, need to have diverse points of view, and we need to inform ourselves with the other points of view so that we become more tolerant. We can have more civil discourse, which has kind of gone downhill lately. And you and I have talked about things, and I respect that about you, that you're thoughtful. And you have the benefit of frontline experience in dealing with guns and gun purchasers. So we're going to get to that. The phone number here is 503-325-0010. 503-325-0010. And so to make it kind of topical, folks know that the Oregon legislature is in session. And it's good to know that there are laws, gun laws, being proposed in the, well, as I understand it, it's the Oregon Senate. And so I could take a minute to get the text of Senate Bill 501. There it is. So I'm looking actually at a copy of the bill that's been proposed. Proposed by Senator Wagner and Representative Salinas at the request of Students for Change, filed pre-session. And the summary says that it requires a person to secure a permit before purchasing a firearm. And if you buy one without a permit, it sounds like it's an A misdemeanor, $6,250 fine, maximum of 364 days imprisonment. And requires a person who owns or possesses a firearm to secure that firearm with a trigger or cable lock or locked container. And it, same penalty, a misdemeanor. Requires a person who owns or possesses a firearm to report the loss of firearm within 24 hours, loss or theft. That seems fair. Prohibits possession of magazine with capacity to hold more than 5 rounds of ammunition. Provides that the person in possession of such magazine that holds more must sell or otherwise dispose of the magazine within 180 days. That would be an A misdemeanor if they fail to do so. Requires background checks before transfer of ammunition. Before the sale of ammunition, you need to get paid the $10 and the half-hour wait to get your ammo, and restricts ammunition receipt to 20 rounds within a 30-day period. So I guess we should we should first of all, Neil, tell us about yourself and how you ended up being a gun and other proprietor, and what experience you bring to that.
Well, I, you know, I grew up rural on 65 acres, and you know, the 22 long rifle was always a tool that sat in the corner of the farmhouse. You had to do something to protect your chickens, but as I think I was when I was 19, I went in the Army, served on the East Coast and in Germany when Bosnia was going on, and then came back and went to college and started working in the family business, which is M&N Workwear, and spent quite a bit of time doing that. And then we ended up having a second store in Klatskanai, and in the, a couple years into that, the local gun dealer had a business, Sporties. A lot of people remember him. He ended up retiring, and we had the opportunity to move into that building, and we thought we'd give Sporting Goods a try. And kind of ever since then, it's been about 5 years now, I've been going down that path, which is, you know, I've learned a lot as well. And I can understand from an outsider's viewpoint, looking at it, it's a daunting industry. And then once you get in it, it's even more daunting. The regulations and requirements for everything, it's pretty involved, and I'm still learning to this day. So I'm definitely a student of legislation now.
Well, you can see, just to kind of get to the point, one of the main points here, the public has a concern that people that there are people that should not have firearms that are getting access to them. They're able to purchase them. Maybe the background checks are not restrictive enough. There's maybe there's not enough mental health protection. Protection against people who have significant mental health difficulties. So, from your perspective as somebody that sells guns to the general public and officiates and administers the background checks, and you know, I've done a number of them. They take a good while, and they're, I can see that if you want to run a business, it just kind of becomes, you stop everything to what you're doing to take care of that, and ties you up for a while. What do you see, and what concerns do you have in terms of how it's working, how the system is working, what won't help it on that regard?
That's a big question.
Well, you and I have talked about this.
Yeah. You know, the background check, how efficient it is now. I mean, it's you know, they can go as quick as 30 seconds if it's a slow day. But I think, you know, everybody who's on the fence or either on each side of the fence, the more information the more information you have, the better. So there's, you know, I think last year there was over 300,000 firearms. You might do a little fact checking on that, but I think in Oregon, it's a large amount. So you see legislation come through like 501, where you have to apply to a sheriff in order to get a permit. Well, you just have to understand that you're asking the sheriffs to fill out 300,000 or more. In fact, in Washington, it was 600,000 last year. So that's, I mean, even if you're efficient with that, that weight on law enforcement is something that needs to be taken into account. And I'm not saying that, you know, one way or another, but you need to realize that when you put more regulation on a highly regulated industry, it's going to have shockwaves. So, I mean, everybody just needs to realize that, you know, there is a lot of regulation that everybody sees with the background checks and stuff. There's a lot of regulation behind the scenes that is kept, you know, between us and the ATF and stuff, paperwork-wise, that we have to do, forms we have to file, procedures when used guns come in, all of these things the public doesn't see, nor do they talk about. But there is, you know, many procedures we have to do on top of the background check.
But there are people that say that if you prevent even one bad guy getting a gun from using it and killing himself or herself or others or doing a mass, then all that paperwork and administration cost and delay, even if it's put upon private businesses and the government without maybe funding, is worth it.
Yeah. And that's, I think that crosses into the point of where, you know, it's not something that somebody can decide except for themselves, because I don't look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Other people do look at it that way. But if I have, if you limit my ability to defend myself because I carry a concealed weapon, even if you take away my ability to, if I never have to use that, still taking away my ability, it does affect me. Because you can say, okay, we need to, you know, do all these regulations to stop it. That still, there might be one bad guy out there. Because, I mean, in a world without firearms, you know, everybody, there's still going to be bad people there. And that's not a scapegoat thing. I mean, I understand. And that's, you know, you hear that argument a lot from the people who support firearms, where, you know, you have bad people all the time. You take away the firearm, they're going to take a machete. I mean, it's just bad people. You can't stop bad.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's how it is. Bad people will violate the law to do bad things.
Yeah.
And that would, I assume, include, you know, that would include you know, all kinds of illegal acts to get the gun or the weapon to do it in the first place. But moving on, and I'm reminding our callers, today's topic is gun laws, what works, what doesn't work, and the number to call in if you have comments on gun control legislation, either what you think would be a good idea or what's before, you know, the feds or the Oregon legislature. The number here is 503-325-0010. My guest is Neil Christensen. And there are, I've heard varying statistics on this, between 8 and 13 states which have instituted red flag laws. Washington has one. I think there's one that is being proposed for the Oregon legislature, and there's a bunch of other states. The Massachusetts comes to mind. And those laws put some, and I mentioned this in my campaign for House District 32 as an idea that you would put, you would give in to law enforcement or family members the ability to put a temporary moratorium on the purchase of firearms, and you put your due process protections on that. And then after the right to a hearing, contested hearing, the person is precluded from obtaining a firearm, buying or possessing one for a year. Now, that seems like a pretty reasonable proposition, because family members are going to know, you know, hey, this, you know, my kid has just been acting wacky, been making threats. Sometimes making a threat is not sufficient to involve law enforcement and to make arrest and put restrictions. What do you think about those red flag laws, Neil?
I think the idea of it, you know, like always, I think it's a good idea. But, you know, I worry when you talk about it, the thing that pops up in my mind is that, you know, if you have a disgruntled spouse or somebody, they can take away your ability to purchase a firearm. And, you know, the idea is sound, but you need to be careful that it's not exploited as well, because, you know, you need to prove, you know, that's the way with the background check. I mean, you know, if somebody's a criminal, if they're a felon,
yeah,
you do the background check, they're not allowed. But there's, you know, the red flag law is one thing that's been mentioned. I mean, the idea that you could have a blacklist that, you know, from right now, and when you come to purchase a firearm, you start from scratch. Mm-hmm. They need to decide whether or not you are good from zero. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you had a more developed blacklist, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you're not able, you know, there's lots of things that we could do. It's just a matter of, you know, coming together, which it doesn't seem like we're,
well, we're,
know,
not.
We're doing.
But the reason I like that is, aside from the fact it has due process protections, so the person who is being stopped from getting a firearm because of this law has a right to appear in court and contest them, call witnesses, put people under oath, and the judge has to decide. And part of the calculus here in what seems like maybe an abridgment, if minor, in the greater context of things of the Second Amendment, is that a lot of times we have to try to balance things. And the balance is here that more and more children, for example, are getting killed by mass killers that are not showing up on the list. They're starting from zero. There's no background. But we find time and again that family members or law enforcement have investigated. There's been threats. You know, the Sandy Hook Elementary school killings. I think there might have been a remedy there. So it's an imperfect world, and it's just hard to find solutions. But it seems among many, that one is good, and I hope that will receive some consideration. That might be, for my mind, the most effective thing. But the topic today is gun laws, what works and what won't work. So I want to go back to Senate Bill 501, what won't work. Now, there's things about doing a background check to purchase ammo. Now, what do you think about that idea?
I'm in the, you know, the reloading side of everything where, you know, I reload my ammo at home and everything. And it seems like a waste of, you can have, and you can, you know, if you have a buddy that reloads, he can give you 10,000 rounds of ammo. It's not that big a deal the way the technology is to produce a large amount of ammo. So, you know,
I don't reload. I buy, you know, for plinking or for hunting or target practice. I buy, and I'm just thinking, okay, there's three other people here that want to buy a gun, and there's three other people here in the store that want to buy 20 rounds of ammo. And do you think that could just like have a discouraging or detrimental effect on people who have legitimate interests and legitimate Second Amendment rights, that there would be an infringement in a situation as I've just described?
Well, I think so. It gets to the point where
I'm talking about a background check.
Yeah,
and if it's busy, you could. I've waited 45 minutes to an hour.
Well, these background checks are not. I mean, it's not like they're just poof and they're all done by computers. There's, you know, Oregon State police officers that are employed there. You know, each of them. Sometimes it takes 10, 15 minutes for one of these to get checked. You know, if you quadruple, because I sell much more ammo than I do guns. So if you take the background system and you times it by a multiple of 10, you're just going to crush the system. And I've had.
And that is an infringement. If you can't buy the weapon, or if you can't buy, even though you're a legitimate, crime-free, mentally stable hunter or plinker or target sportsman, you're just not going to be able to do that. And that would, I think, to any fair understanding of the Second Amendment, be an infringement of that constitutional right.
So one thing I'd say is you have, you know, if you have 100% of the ability to do background checks and take care of it, mm-hmm. if you double or quadruple the amount you're checking, you're not going to be 100% anymore. That's my main concern that I fear is
that it'll crush the capacity of the system to absorb all the data processing demands.
There will be more errors as well.
And more errors
it is
as well.
Not infallible. I mean, there is, you're going to have mistakes made if you have that much volume. So you're making firearm checks more dangerous because you're not going to have a system that's efficient. So you end up, in my opinion, it would end up causing more harm. Would have more mistakes.
Now, there's another aspect of SB 501, and I don't know if it's going to get out of committee or have enthusiasm, but that says restricts ammunition receipt to 20 rounds within a 30-day period. Do you have any comment on that, its practicality or value?
I'm curious, especially if somebody's calling in, how they, the viewpoint, the idea that to limit it to 20 rounds, because, you know, I'm involved with shooting clay pigeons up at the Napa gun range. You know, I go duck hunting I'd like to say that every shell I shoot when I'm duck hunting gets a duck, but it's more like 20 shells for one duck. So, you can't even sight in a rifle sometimes to go hunting for an elk. So, you know, do you want more wounded elk out there? I mean, it just bleeds on down the line where...
Well, the industry is now configured, and this is a national industry, to sell ammunition in boxes of 50.
Yeah.
Not 20?
No, you can't. I mean, not only that, but backing up to your magazine restriction, very few guns are manufactured with magazines that are 5 rounds. You can't buy a handgun that takes a magazine that has 5 rounds. California, and I some other guns, they're restricted to 10 rounds, so a lot of firearms come with 10-round magazines. Mm-hmm. They do not manufacture 5-round magazines for those guns.
Well, let's talk about the magazine restriction. Can you see the pros and the cons in that point of view?
So once again, in my world, I'm into the firearms and the shooting sports. So the way I look at it is no, not really. I mean, I've seen, you know, I'm quick at changing magazines mm-hmm. just because I shoot and I'm a sports shooter and I practice a lot.
And military background.
And military background as well. There are people that, you give them a 5-round magazine, they can outshoot and change magazines way quicker than I mean, less than a second. So they're almost a constant rate of fire like a semi-auto.
Yeah, they're competitive.
Yeah.
It's a whole technique, that's special adjustments.
Exactly how it is. So you know, it's just like the legislation thing. I mean, you're fighting over something, and you're and I'm not sure that it.
Well, what about a limit of a magazine with 10 rounds? Do you think that would be a fair middle ground between the two competing points of view? You want to have an opportunity for a break in the shooting to tackle the shooter in the school if there's, you know, somebody inclined to do so. But you can't do that if they've got a banana clip or 50 rounds or 30 rounds. The 10 rounds, you know, there'll still be somebody maybe standing to charge the guy and stop the carnage. What about that?
I think that you're focusing on the wrong issue is what I see, is that, you know, if you get shot with the 9th bullet or the 11th bullet, the issue's still there. And I think, that's not going to solve it.
So. But it may not solve it, but could it not, at least for the sake of argument, incrementally improve survival? I guess the problem I see it is there's a lot of them out there, and I hate to rely on old saws, but if you outlaw guns, only gun outlaws will have guns. And it comes to my mind that there's black market, there's America's awash in firearms and perhaps clips that. So the law, well-intended, expresses a political reality that's understood by law-abiding citizens, but maybe not understood or appreciated by non-law-abiding citizens, criminals.
Right.
Your thoughts? I
agree with that. I mean, we had a shooting in Kelso, which a young lady lost her life. The shooter was 19, and he shot the lady with a handgun. Well, it is federally illegal for anybody under the age of 21 to purchase a handgun. So, if he bought that, you know, I don't know where he got that from.
That's a national law or Oregon law?
That's a national law.
So a pistol, if you want to go buy like a Smith & Wesson revolver or a Glock 9mm and you're under 21, you cannot do so?
No, it's federally illegal.
Okay, it's federally illegal.
So the way the laws are structured, which is, you know, that's one reason why I'm here, is to inform everybody, is the law is actually, it's written where there's no firearm can be purchased in the United States under the age of 21, with the exception of a rifle and a shotgun.
Looks like we have a caller. Thanks for your call. What's your comment or question?
I don't know. I think all this, like, legislation is kind of missing the point. I mean, I don't remember where I read it, but there's a statistic that almost all school shootings are done with, like, firearms, like handguns, you know, and it's mostly their dad's handguns, legally bought, past the background check and everything, you know?
Is that your understanding, Neil?
My understanding,
wasn't the so-called assault rifle or the AR-15 involved in at least some of them? Sandy Hook.
Yeah, and the firearm was actually locked, but it was locked in a gun cabinet. And I believe it was his mother's, but those gun cabinets are like thin sheet metal. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, he just pried it open basically and took the firearm and went and.
And did his heinous acts. So, caller, you think that even if there were bans on assault rifles and bans on, magazine or prohibitions on magazine sizes down to 10 or 5 isn't practical, but 10, you think we'd still have to confront the fact that there are crazy people or depressed or what have you would do this?
I think there's not enough focus on mental health in this country, and that's the root of the problem. I mean, kids don't naturally want to kill other kids. It's a problem of how we treat mental health. I mean, as a man, kids are told to, you know, like, keep their emotions bottled up, and that's not going to be healthy in the long run.
Yeah, there's all kinds of nefarious, influences on community health, mental health, you know, I guess, you know, I had a program that ruffled a few feathers on where do our children get their values. And, you know, there's a lot of pieces to how children turn up so flawed. Sometimes it's brain chemistry. Sometimes it's failure to take medication. Sometimes, maybe in the Columbine, a child has been bullied and abused because he's different. You know, there's a lot of madness. There's a lot of anger out there, and we don't seem to have the ability as families or communities to contain it. So I have to agree with the caller on that. I mean, you can't solve a problem like that. Like the machete will arise, as you said, Neil, just by passing laws. Do you have any further thoughts on that, Neil?
Well, I think the mental health issue, you know, that seems like it's getting more and more awareness now. You know, I don't want to drown anybody in statistics, but when you look at, firearm deaths in the country, I think 2018 was one of the highest. And then you look at the amount of those that were self-inflicted, and it kind of wakes you up with the issue. Over half of them were self-inflicted.
That's so, exactly right. The majority of gun deaths in this country are suicides.
So, I mean, we can sit and argue and tug of war over firearms and this legislation and stuff like that. But we, you know, if this is fine, if we have intelligent discourse and we try to solve the issues, but you also need to be aware of the fact that there are the issues of, you know, youths and self-inflicted guns, being more responsible as citizens, because I don't think getting rid of firearms is the answer. Especially, you know, I think there's a lot of people, whether they're veterans or what, but, you know, the oath I took as a soldier, it didn't have an expiration date. And that's one I've talked to a lot of people who are veterans, who are supporters of the Second Amendment, and it's for the Constitution, and it's also for your neighbor. I mean, everybody thinks it's a selfish thing, but, you know, if a crime's being committed, or, you know, I've talked to many people who they see a police officer pulling somebody over, and I watch the police officer to make sure he's not, because I've had friends who are officers that got shot on duty. Mm-hmm. You know, you're there with that responsibility as well.
Anything else, caller?
No, thank you.
Thank you for calling. I really appreciate that. Well, we got one caller on Conversation with John Hoare. We probably have time for another one. Just looking at some of my notes here, in the state of Florida, we were talking about the red flag laws, if a person is deemed dangerous with judicial approval in the state of Florida, that can bar a person from owning a gun or purchasing a gun for a year. And they found that in the first 9 months of 2018, after that law passed, there were 1,000 orders. 1,000 orders. Now, were the orders successful? Again, my calculus is to err on the side of saving lives in this debate. So I think that would be one way to go. It's not the perfect way, but it is the way to at least take some steps forward to address the implication of the depressed or the mentally ill in their pursuit of guns and violent destruction. So, 14 states have passed that law. I want to just run on a couple topics with you, Neil, while I got you here in the time that remains. Ban on bump stocks, favor or disfavor?
Ooh, you're asking my opinion? Eh. I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm going to have to ponder that for a while.
Okay, yeah.
It's more complicated than yes or no.
Well, there's nothing sporting about it. And given, you know, if you try to, when you pass laws or try to address significant, almost emergency dimension problems that, what's the trade-off? Is it significant as a Second Amendment trade-off? I don't see it. I see the bump stop as a bypass to federal firearm restrictions on automatic weaponry to the general, unlicensed, unpermitted public, and the downside is that you can have a shooter like the guy in Las Vegas, you know, and he can create 400 casualties in a pretty short space of time.
It was 160, 170 casual, or I'm
no,
not, was it 400?
Really? Well, I thought it, that could
it
be
might
wrong.
Have been up there.
He was up there a while, and he was well-fortified.
And that's, you know, there is, I mean, that's such a tragedy that, I mean, it just makes everybody sick to their stomach.
Well, that's a bump stock argument, isn't it?
Well, you're getting into, I mean, bad you know, graphic type stuff. So the accuracy when you're using bump stock, much less.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
You shoot a lot, but if someone is an owner of a semi-automatic weapon, it's a $200 tax stamp in 9 months, and you can own a fully automatic weapon.
Good,
it's the same background check.
Okay, let me run another one by you, because we're running out of time here. What about restricting firearm access by from people that are on the terrorist watch list or the no-fly list for the airlines? Is that okay with you?
It's the same with, you got to be careful with the due process. You can't just, you know, you don't like the look of somebody and you're going to take away their rights. I mean, you know, all of the stuff has to be done carefully because, you know, these are...
Right. There are some people that I think maybe have been on the no-fly list and it's been maybe not well justified. So you definitely need to have that due process there. Well, I guess we're going to have to pretty much wrap it up there. So I do want to thank my guest, Mr. Neil Christensen, owner of Gun and Boot and Ammo inside the M&M store, for sharing his thoughts, his insights, his experience on this difficult topic. We appreciate KMUN and listening audience let me bring some of these controversial topics. We're trying to just raise the level of awareness and make sure we pass good laws and we respect other points of view. So I'm John Orr. We will be back next week with a conversation with John Orr at 9:30 on Friday. And let's do some weather. Today, showers likely, mostly cloudy, with a high near 45. South winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, showers through the night, mostly cloudy, low 35. So it doesn't look like it's going to freeze. Showers likely Saturday in the morning, high 45. Wind gusts up to 18 miles per hour. Saturday night, 50 chance of showers, mostly cloudy with low 30. Sunday, mostly sunny, the high near 45, and Sunday night clear with a low around 30. So there we have that, and it is 10 o'clock, right on the nose. This is KMUN, Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you miss this broadcast, while you won't be able to call in, I thank the one caller for today's show, you can listen to it on a podcast at coastradio.org under Listen. So we have news coming up at 10:01. We're listening to Buck Reed, The Waiting Room. He's a pedal steel guitar god.